Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us wherever you're joining us. If you're joining us on television here in Santa Barbara area in California, we welcome you at TVSB. And so many of you join us on the other platforms, the YouTube channel. A lot of you have been to goodlifetelevision.org, which is the website where you can see all the interviews there as well. I encourage you to subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can be notified when new content comes. It's every week. There's constantly content coming on the YouTube channel. I think there's almost 500 videos there. So we've had a lot of amazing guests. And then we break up those full-form interviews into what we call power clips. So there's a lot of these great moments where you can see those as well. And then finally, the podcast, which is popular for some people. You can search any podcast platform at Good Life Conversations. Good Life Conversations is the podcast platform. So I hope you'll join us on those different various platforms. We're loving seeing you, and we're talking about the good stuff, and we're talking with great people who are doing great things and great stories, all walks of life. So it's been really fun. We're glad you're along for the ride. My guest today, I'm really excited about. He has been kind of a legend in radio for many years. His name is Dennis Mitchell. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You do have a good radio voice now.
That's what everybody says.
Yeah, it's the right profession.
We all hate hearing our own voice, but it's nice to hear other people say that. Thank you.
No, it's a good voice. So Dennis, we were talking before we came on. He's had a passion and a great career in radio. He produced and hosted Breakfast with the Beatles, which was kind of a fantastic thing that we'll talk about, and then recently his project, there's a town south of here called Carpinteria, which is a wonderful town, and so there Dennis has launched Carpinteria Valley Radio, which is on streaming online through its website, and soon to be, we're expecting to be on the FM dial sometime in early 2024 is the hope, and so you can be watching for that, and it's a really great idea. But I want to start with kind of your upbringing. Where'd you come from? Where'd you grow up? Kind of what was that like?
Riverside, California. A military brat. My dad bounced around from base to base in California, and was at Castle up by Modesto for a long time, and they transferred in 1963, they transferred him to March Air Force Base. And so we wound up in, you know, a nice tract home that you'd see in so many suburban neighborhoods at that time in 63, in Riverside, in suburban Riverside, in a house that cost them $13,000. Four bedroom house.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So yeah.
Did you go to high school in Riverside?
Yes, I did. I went to Ramona High.
My dad's sitting right over there. Ramona High School grad.
Hey.
If you can believe it.
Class of 72.
All right. He was a little bit before that.
Okay.
I won't give you the year.
But yeah, it was great school. Still got a lot of dear friends from there. Their 50th anniversary was just last year.
Nice.
That's where radio came in my life when I was four. But my involvement in it started at Ramona High School. And I remember distinctly it was a pink piece of paper stapled onto a bulletin board thing about the radio club that the school had. It was called RAMCOM, and their mission was to put together and produce a half-hour program that we would go down to a local radio station and actually do live on Saturday mornings. It was quite a thrill. It was funny because, you know, none of us knew what we were doing.
Yeah.
I remember it pretty vividly. Developed our own little top 10 list of hits, talked about school functions and events that were coming up, and that was my first time I really got to set foot inside a radio station and do stuff. Of course, there was limited control because you didn't want a bunch of kids running around handling the equipment when they didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
So, but it was good guidance. There were good people there, and that really was my first inkling, my first taste of doing live radio, and I did a newscast on it as well. I went to college at San Bernardino Valley College. I think it's called something else now, but they had not only a radio program but a TV broadcasting program, and I was part of both. I did live play-by-play basketball.
Did you really?
Yeah, and part of the great memory of that was San Bernardino Valley College at the time was the first in the country to have a female player on its varsity basketball team. And that was pretty amazing. And I got to interview not only her, but Bryant Gumbel, who was working at Channel 4 at the time, was there for the game. And I got to do a little in-depth with Bryant at halftime. So yeah, it was a good baptism of fire for broadcasting. And then had my own radio show on the radio station at Valley College as well. And you know, that's basically where I got off and running. And as we were discussing off the air, it gets in your blood and never leaves.
So. See, my first radio job was a little different. You had supervision. So I'm 17 years old, and they give me the night shift at 101.7 Radio Pacific, which is smooth jazz. Okay. Midnight to 6 a.m. was my shift. So they just left me alone in the studio. I was just there, right?
You sought the job, though.
I actually went and sought the job. Okay. I don't even know if I got paid. I don't think I got paid. I think it was like unpaid. So I have to stay awake.
Yeah.
Like that's the trick.
Yeah.
You try putting smooth jazz on midnight to 6 a.m. unsupervised. So there was a little dead air, I have to confess, at times. I did fall asleep a few times, but it was a hoot. And there is something cool about the first time you... Like for a while, I was just board operating, but then they let me talk.
Yeah.
I have one day, I'm like, hey, you know, can I talk? And they're like, yeah. So they'll let me talk. And there was something like trippy about that message being brought, that voice being broadcast and going out. Like, that was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like, wow, this is an opportunity.
Yes.
And you can reach a lot of people.
Right.
And especially with radio.
Right. But at that age, you stop and think about it, you screw up.
You get too nervous.
It's too big, you know.
Yeah, I can't say anything.
But yeah, I've been there right where there with you. One of my first paid commercial jobs was in Las Vegas, changing the tapes, changing the reel-to-reel tapes on what they used to call elevator music. So I feel you as far as having to stay awake and trying to get it right. And even with a simple job like that, yeah, I screwed it up a couple of times and some backwards classical music played for a while one night. It's like, you know. It happens to the best of us.
You win some and you lose some.
Exactly.
So for us, it was CDs. And so there was this huge rack of CDs on the wall. And so literally, I'm going, they're all numbered and all there. But I'm going, picking the CD, loading it, which song. So it's songs. So there's a little work to it back then, in terms of like I'm running down the hall to get the next CD. And like, but it was, what an interesting thing. So you got it in your blood. You set out on, did you know this was going to be your career?
I really wanted it to be.
Yeah.
You know, life being what it is, adulthood being what it is, I spent my time doing jobs, hourly paid jobs and things, you know, to pay the rent. I was married and took my time easing into a career. I did some college work up at Los Altos Hills. I lived in the Bay Area at the college station KFJC, still a great station. Even did a shift at KOME in San Jose, and moved to Las Vegas, where everything got started for me is in terms of radio. I had a paying job to pay the rent, and it was one of those deals where I got part-time jobs in radio, just changing the tapes, whatever I could get, and eventually landed a job doing the news at the all-news radio station in Las Vegas. And then I became the operations manager within 3 or 4 months. This has been a pattern in my career. I step in, and the person above me steps out, and I'm there. And so that was where I made the decision to leave hourly paid work for jobs I didn't like or care for and do something I like for a little less money, because happiness is its own pay, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's when I made the full-time jump over, and my background is in news. That changing the tape stuff I told you about was about 3 years before I got the news job, and it was at KNUU. It was a full-service, all-news radio station in Las Vegas, and it was a big responsibility. And one of the first things I ever had to do, my initiation there was the 1984 hotel workers strike, which was major and covered bartenders and housekeepers and musicians. And it was a war between, you know, the casino industry, the hotel industry, and these unions. And, talked to Senator Harry Reid a few times on the air about this. And that's where I learned about stringing for major networks, where I would feed CBS a little 60-second piece, and you get a little extra money for that, or Associated Press, RKO at the time. So yeah, my background's in news, won the Mark Twain Award for Excellence from Associated Press in 1985. And that was, you know, I was happy with that. You know, I do Breakfast with the Beatles. So in my private life, I'm a Beatles freak. I'm a rock and roll, you know, music fanatic. But I'm doing the news during the day and enjoying it and enjoying my radio experience.
I'm not saying this to flatter you, but you must have been really young.
I started later than everybody else in my career, at least. I was approaching 30. When I was doing that.
That's fantastic.
And like I said, I was proud of the work I did. And after a few years of doing that, I was approached by one of the rock stations in Las Vegas to see if I wanted to be their news director. And I said yes. Because, you know, doing all news is a grind. It's like I said, it's very rewarding work. Nothing is better than getting accurate, dependable information out to people. So I took that ethic over with me to KKLZ, the big rock station there, and worked with a morning show. And then they hired another morning show, came in that were the two, it was just the funniest morning show I've ever heard in my whole life. Really? It remains that way. But they were bad. They got themselves into trouble a lot doing on-air stunts and things that, I mean, the upside is just hysterically funny.
Yeah.
But the station lawyers were always pulling their hair out. So I was all in that little mixture too, and doing kind of a hip kind of newscast each hour, calling it a dose of reality. Those were really great days. Those are really, really fun days, and got to hang out with rock stars, and Little Richard came in one morning, and comedians that went on to be huge and famous. Ray Romano came in before, he was just doing stand-up at the time. So that was one of my golden experiences, working with Johnson & Tofty on KKLZ radio in Las Vegas during the 90s. And they ruled. I mean, they ruled even at a time when Howard Stern came in and changed radio basically by syndicating his show all across the country. They actually topped him in the ratings a couple of times.
Right?
It was hard to do because Howard was very, very good and a very popular product that he put out, especially back then when he just made the transition. So.
Those were some glory years for like that FM morning. Remember Rick Dees?
Absolutely.
I mean, there was like a huge thing that happened in that. So you were part of that.
The result of it, even, you know, in the late 70s when I lived in San Francisco and I was running around fixing alarm systems, KSAN was the station. And I learned so much from listening to those very original, very clever, very intelligent DJs. Particularly the morning people, and my goal was to always be on from 10 to 2, you know, after the morning show, you know, when all hell can be breaking loose, then you settle down with the midday guy, who maybe has a feature or two of his own, but he's there to keep you happy and not necessarily crack you up. So this is where I always wanted to be. That's where I always wanted to land, and I realized that dream when I finally moved out to the coast and started working at K-Tide about 5 years ago.
How great. You and I share a love for Vin Scully.
Oh, the best. The best that there ever was.
I always say, I think if you could hear God's voice, it might sound like Vin Scully.
I've heard that one before. And I've, you know, we all lift things. I told you I called my news Dose of Reality. I got that from a guy named Dave McQueen, who was a brilliant broadcaster in San Francisco. And even when I do Breakfast with the Beatles now, new shows, I'll start with, hey, welcome to Breakfast with the Beatles, wherever you may be. little bit of Vin right there. I was heartbroken when he passed, he was just always the greatest.
The best.
But if I could share another thing that injected all this into my blood, the very first Major League Baseball game I ever attended was June 23rd, 1970. It was the California Angels against the Chicago White Sox. My uncle was Red Rush, who was an announcer for the White Sox, who sat next to the great Bob Elson, who's a Hall of Fame broadcaster. The first game I ever attended, I got to sit in the broadcast booth with
them.
Yeah. And I'd been watching baseball on TV for years, and the first thing is like, I can see the baseball. It was just having, you know, a mild heart attack the whole game.
I bet.
And they said my name on Chicago radio, and it was quite a thrill, quite a thrill. You know, baseball announcing, sports announcing in general, and Chick Hearn. Also the greatest who ever lived. Yes.
And Bob Miller with the Kings. We had Chick Hearn, Bob Miller.
And Dick Enberg.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you know, between Chick Hearn, Bob Miller, and Vin Scully, like growing up with that, it was like, how could you not be interested in radio? Or like, I was like, and it was as good as, they're just all as good as it gets. I mean, they're the gold standard, you know, everybody. And I love the new guy, Joe Davis, but it's like, it's hard to listen. It's hard to not hear his voice. And there's something about radio that's intimate in a sense that it comes, somebody coming into your home or your car, and where you feel like you know them. I got to meet Vin Scully a few times, and when I did it, you know, I'm looking at him like he's my best friend. Mm-hmm. He's looking at me like, who is this guy? You know? But you do feel like they're your best friend, because they're in your summer nights. For me, my dad can attest, Vin Scully was Vin Scully.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's an intimacy that radio brings, almost.
There is. These people are your friends.
Yeah.
We used to be this way. Things are in such a transition now. We're talking about kind of before maybe the 90s, but you're right. I taught broadcasting for a number of years in Las Vegas as well. And the thing you want to teach people who are terrified that there's an audience out there is you're just talking to one person. Okay,
right.
Imagine that person. You're in the car with that person. You're just chiming in. You're letting them know, you know, you're keeping the conversation pleasant and mutual. And that's how they become your friends. It's like they project that they know you, or at least they know what you're about and what information would help you.
Yes.
I mean, if you're good, that's what you strive for, is to be the friend of the listener, regardless of who that may be. But it comes easier as a technical trick to pretend you're talking to one person.
Yeah,
you know how
totally.
They say they're speaking to an audience, pretend they're all wearing their underwear or something like this. Well, in radio, you talk to one person.
Talk to one person,
and,
that's
and
so
it,
good.
It tends to come out a lot better.
Right, so you taught broadcasting too.
Yeah, yeah. There was a reputable broadcasting school in Las Vegas, which is where I lived for many, many years. I moved away from the Bay Area, lived there for 30 years, raised a child, and I just came back to the coast in 2015. When I was in Vegas, I was approached by a guy running a broadcasting school, and took the job as a teacher and elevated my way up to being the director of the place and wrote the curriculum. And I'm very proud to say got dozens of people jobs in radio, a few of which are still working in radio.
Wow.
And this was like 35 years ago. So
wow.
That was a real labor of love and so rewarding and satisfying. And especially when I say reputable, it was a school that I made sure only recruited people that had a chance at this.
Yeah.
You know, there were many that would take anybody who could talk.
Right.
And you know, I can't imagine how frustrating that must be. But in our instance at the school I worked at, and I believe me, I fought the owner on it quite a bit as far as what the qualifications of these people should be. You're taking their money. It's like
right.
You need to give them a product that is equal to what they're paying for it. And so it was that was a very happy and wonderful existence as
yeah,
well. And a little notch in my resume as far as, you know, teaching broadcasting encompasses a lot more than just the art of doing broadcasting, proper English.
Yep.
You know, the flow, continuity, camaraderie with listeners. All these things are applicable to your life,
yep.
You know, not just radio. So
Vin
that made
Scully
it...
told me you need to read a lot.
That's true. Yeah. If
you develop your vocabulary.
Command of the language.
Your knowledge... just in general.
Yeah, command of the language, be a little worldly, you know, give the people the impression you know a thing or two and you've been a place
right,
or two.
Right,
yeah, absolutely.
I admire anybody who can live in Las Vegas to begin with. I could only handle about 48 hours back in the day and I had to get out.
Yeah.
I had to get out of town. It was like, this was like too much.
This is how it is for me now. I had had enough over the years I'd lived there. It just, for
you had
me,
to get to the coast.
Personally, exactly, yeah. You know, I lived there in the heyday. When I moved to Las Vegas in 79, it was still mom and pop from Iowa bringing their quarters, you know, and locals got great deals. We could get a breakfast anywhere for about a dollar.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. It was really fun. It was still fun. Fremont Street, they'd close the street and there was a party out there.
Yeah.
Every New Year's Eve.
Golden Nugget.
Oh,
yeah. Back in the day.
The Mint, the Horseshoe, all those great old places. The Silver Slipper. you know, those were wonderful little places, and people would come to town, we'd have a blast with them. And the radio station, the rock station I told you I moved to, was actually across the freeway from where the Mirage Hotel sits now. But at the time, it was the dunes and just that little part of the strip there. We watched one by one, we watched from our parking lot, watched the implosions of those buildings go down. And then as we go to work each morning, we saw the new buildings come up over about a 3 or 4 year period. And that was a wonderful time too. You know, Steve Wynn led the way and transformed Las Vegas into a more, I don't want to say upper class, but just a bigger deal than it even was before that. From there, for me,
it kind of corporate.
It kind of when they built the city center thing, everything became a much longer walk for a much less payoff. Right. Locals aren't treated like they used to be. You actually have to pay for parking everywhere you go.
Yeah.
I do go. My son lives there. My grandson lives there. I go back a few times a year and visit, and we still have fun, you know, and still know how to have fun. But that's why I tell Vegas, it's great to go have fun there. Don't live there. You know, the local services leave a lot to be desired sometimes,
really?
and agencies to deal with and stuff like that. It can be a real hassle. And then there's the heat.
Oh man.
I don't miss that a bit.
No, not at all.
And I was a desert rat. It was no problem moving there. I grew up in Riverside. My dad used to take us down to Salton Sea when you could actually swim in it. That's how old I am. And so the heat never really bothered me. But after watching the town take the shape it did, it became more of a factor, a negative factor. I came out here and I love breathing the cool air.
We're sitting here right now, it's July, and it is nice, and I'm wearing a suit and not sweating. Breakfast with the Beatles. Tell people about this.
When I got the job at the Rock Station in Las Vegas, they had a Breakfast with the Beatles show on Saturday morning, and my dear friend Jeff Anderson was the host. But it wasn't a structured show necessarily. It was pretty much songs that were stacked up, I think, by computer. And Jeff would chime in every third or fourth song with what you just heard. I was approached in late 90 and asked if I wanted to host that show. I said yes. Took at it with real zeal. I mean, I was a Beatles fan, you know, from the first time I ever heard Hold Me Tight at the neighbor's house on his record player, because we weren't allowed to have that stuff in the house. I missed the first Ed Sullivan show appearance because my dad was anti-Beatles. I had to sneak over to next door the next week to see him on Ed Sullivan. So I was a hardcore fan. But I confess, by the time 1990 rolled around, you know, I listened to my albums a few times a year. I didn't have a regular thing going with them, really. So I hit the books when they gave me the job. I said, yeah, I can definitely do that. And I relearned everything, because the last thing you want to do is host a show like that and not know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of research, and I started cranking out these shows every week. I did them live for the first few months. And the show already had kind of a built-in following, but I added a lot to it. Features, interviews, and just created what I think a good show about the Beatles would be. And it was 1 hour for many, many years. It went on to win every media award you could win in Las Vegas and Nevada, for that matter. And just so rewarding. And the journey has been the reward in terms of, to this day, I learn stuff. You know, there's such a universe of stuff out there, and especially since social media, everybody knows everything.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find people that don't know the rudimentary things about the Beatles. Well, back then, a lot of people didn't know even the simplest things. So you're bringing an education to them, but it was the Dr. Plummer thing. I wanted to speak to longtime fans with intelligence and on their level, but not talk down to new fans that were never into the Beatles all that much. But here's why you should be. So that was my job each week. And it's still going strong. This show is still on 70 radio stations worldwide every week. It's including K-Tide in Santa Barbara. And I've just recently started a 24-hour stream of all the past shows. I've done 1,600 shows plus.
Oh, my gosh.
So the archived editions are now running back-to-back on a stream, and that's been a joy as well.
Yeah, how do people find that? What is it? Just search
Go to BeatlesRadioShow.com.
BeatlesRadioShow.com.
Or BreakfastWithTheBeatles.net, not .com.
BreakfastWithTheBeatles.net. BreakfastWithTheBeatles.net.
Right. And then go to the listen page, and there's a player right there. Click it.
Oh,
you can have
great.
Beatles anytime you want.
Check that out.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Beatles song? Do you have one?
The next one I hear.
You've been asked that before, haven't
That's
you?
That's a pat answer. Yeah. Leanne grilled me about that before we got over here. But yeah, it's a hard question to answer. One single song out of, you know, and a lot of people are still surprised. They actually only did about 240 songs as a band. Not counting all the solo stuff, which
right.
is its own little universe. But it's so hard to pick one out because there are so many great ones. And, you know, I interviewed once Little Steven from Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band about his favorite songs. It's very individual. It's unique to every person. It's what about their music speaks out to you. Is it the love songs? Well, that gets your mind going one way. Or when they got into psychedelia and they talked about your mind, or adult relationships when they got off the boy-girl stuff. Everybody has a different way that the Beatles speak to them. And Little Steven told me his favorites were like She Said from Revolver, and The Inner Light, which is that Indian sounding thing that George did for a B-side. So those are the things that appealed to him. Lots of people are just mop top all the way. And after Revolver, not so much. They just love that, you know, the mop top, Hard Day's Night era.
Yeah.
And then others just swear off like anything before Revolver. They don't want anything to do with this, like Sgt. Pepper, Revolver's like. So it's very hard to nail it down to one song.
Good,
you know, I tend to go for the later era too. And because of the nature of the program, it's picked up largely by classic rock stations, you know, when that was the dominant format. Still is. I just added one in Alabama a couple of weeks ago. So I tend to, as a lure or as a nod to them, the bulk of the program is the stuff that was 1966 and beyond, but I delve very deeply into the past, played the DECA audition from 62. I don't know when this will air, but today happens to be the anniversary of the day John met Paul.
Is that right?
Yeah, at a picnic outside Liverpool, July 6th, 1957. And the world changed forever that day.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, it's my labor of love every week.
That.
I can't stop doing it. I've scaled back from you know producing a brand new show every week to these archived editions, and even presenting those with a little showcase and extra features and whatnot. I just can't stop.
Yeah.
I love the band. I'll always love the music. Talked to Ringo a few times. Interviewed Yoko 5 times. Have tried relentlessly to get an interview with Paul, but that's hard to do. But the music's always there, and the reward is making it flow and meld together on themes and things, just DJ stuff, you know.
That's
but
so
also good. Running lots of sound bites and audio bits that were crucial to their existence and their arc. And that's the real challenge, too. And that's been kind of a joy, too. Social media and YouTube have brought us all kinds of stuff to the surface that even people like me and people who do Beatles shows and are the elite of Beatles knowledge, we're just finding out about things, you know, that have come to the surface. You may have heard about the new record that's coming out, the last record that will ever be released by the Beatles. It's going to be called Now and Then. You may recall in 1995, when the anthology came out, they had two John Lennon demos that, you know, were just John sitting at a piano on a cassette. So the sound wasn't great, but Jeff Lynne of ELO took everything into the studio and cleaned it all up, and they came out with Free as a Bird and Real Love, brilliant, excellent sounding records. There was a third one, but the vocal on it sounded so bad that George, you know, they said it's a four-way democracy, and George said no, because it just doesn't sound good. Well, Paul has enlisted Peter Jackson's technology of AI to clean up that John Lennon vocal. And now they're going to release it. All four Beatles will be on it, and you hear John's voice crystal clear up front. It's a beautiful song. There have been bootlegs of the song that somebody else kind of produced floating around on the internet for a long time. You could hear it today. So it's a beautiful song, but to hear it in perfect quality, I'm really anxious
that's
for that.
Scary. I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah, yeah.
AI. Hey, AI is doing something good.
Yeah, there's one example.
So real
but
quick.
But it did prompt a huge controversy in that people were going, oh, you're faking John's voice. This is AI. This won't. This will be a. And Paul and Ringo have both put out statements. No, it was strictly used to clean up background noise and make that vocal pristine. There is no fake vocal put in. Still John.
Got it.
And all four Beatles. So there you
Brilliant.
Go. And that should be in a few months.
Carpinteria Valley Radio, we only have a minute. Tell us what your vision is for this.
Carpinteria Valley Radio is the station Carpinteria needs because media in Ventura and Santa Barbara don't always give Carpinteria the love it deserves.
Yep.
Stuff is always happening there, but you have to wait a few days to get it that way. So I'm on every morning, 7 to 9, doing local news, traffic, weather. All of our programming is Carpinteria-centric, interviews with movers and shakers locally. Big changes are coming to the town. And you can find out and stay on top of what is going on in Carpinteria at CarpinteriaValleyRadio.com. There's a player there. We are going to apply for an LPFM license, become a low-power FM station. The window opens in November. We're very optimistic that Carpinteria might have its real, like a Pinocchio radio station that we want to make into a real little boy radio station.
Yeah, right.
So that's the next step, will be to file papers with the FCC later this year, and hopefully a year from now we'll be on the air in your radio.
Love it. Carpinteria Valley Radio. .com. There it is.
Yeah.
I love the shirt.
Thanks.
CarpinteriaValleyRadio.com. For now, that's where you find them. They stream every morning, news, lots of great information. And then hopefully real soon on your FM dial, if you're in Carpinteria, and you can get real Carpinteria-focused news and content. It's a great idea.
Thanks.
So great to meet you.
Thanks. Same
Thank
here,
you.
Man.
Yeah,
Thank you
I
for asking
it.
Me. I really appreciate
great
it.
Great career, great impact. I love everything about it. And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.